Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET for DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is the Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, October 28th, 2007, on the Premier Radio Networks. This is episode 400. I don't say anything during the show, but thank you for all your support over the last 400 episodes. Here's to 400 more. Well, a good day to you. It's time to get geeky. Get your geek on. Leo Laporte here. I am the geek guy. The tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number if you want to talk tech. Now, tech isn't just Windows PCs, by the way. Like some other shows. Heck no. We talk about Macs a lot. In fact, we'll be talking about Leopard a little bit later on. We talk about Linux even and the internet, of course, Web 2.0. That's a big story these days. In fact, I just saw this article in the paper about the Last Supper online. Did you see that? I'll talk about this a little bit later on, but really interesting. We also talk about cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players, home theater. Ron Rosberg, our gadget guru, joins us next hour. He's back from CTIA, the Cell Telephone Industry Association Conference, with a look at the latest cell phones, the cell phones that aren't on the market yet, but will be in the next 6 months to a year. Boy, we talk about that for sure. Anything you want to ask or say or state about technology, anything with a chip in it, it's 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. We also have a chat room you can go into and participate in. It's a good place to meet other listeners and talk back to me because I watch it during the show. It's kind of like the kids in the back of the class, you know, the wiseacres in the, I almost said something else, the wiseacres in the back of the class who, you know, kind of have a side conversation going. But it's fun. It's fun. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. The chat room is irc.dslextreme.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the server for that. irc.dslextreme.com. Website for the show, where all the notes, the show notes are live. Sasha has taken them over from Shubi. You have to have a name that begins with S to do the show notes. Sasha is actually in England doing the show notes. And that website is techguylabs.com. Sasha's been working on a new site for us. We're going to have a nice new site soon. I keep saying it, I know. I just read an article about software development and why it takes longer than anyone ever predicts or expects. And it really is true. And it's not just, you know, Microsoft Word or Windows. It's websites, too, because that's software, too. Part of it's because, I guess, programmers are optimists. Believe me, you wouldn't be a programmer if you weren't an optimist. If you were a realist, you'd probably give the whole thing up. I mean, think about it. Here it is, the most complicated device humankind has ever created. I mean, there's no question about that. Even just the microprocessor alone has millions of little switches in it, little transistors in it, and more all the time. The complexity doubles every 18 months. Every year and a half, it doubles. And that's just the brain of the thing. And then there's the graphics processor and there's the memory and all of this stuff has to somehow work together. And if a stray cosmic ray, a particle come from the sun, hits one bit, it flips the bit, everything breaks. It's amazing that it even works. So if you're a programmer, you have to be an optimist. You have to be somebody who says, I could do that. No problem. And that's what happens is programmers say, oh, yeah, let's see that new website. No problem. I think I could do that in a day. Oh, okay. I know that's ambitious. A week. 6 months later, any day now, it'll be done. It's like Michelangelo in the movie The Agony of the Ecstasy. When will it be done? When it's done. So that's and Sasha's done. I'm still working on it. That's not him. It's me. So that's kind of the way it is in all software. And so when Leopard came out 6 months late, nobody was that surprised. I mean, look how long it went. Vista was 5 years in the making. Supposed to come out in 2003, I think was the first estimate. Came out in 2007. And even then, I think Vista has taken another year to kind of fully cook. Because it's ambitious. And Microsoft has to deal with this very difficult problem. The problem of success in the computer industry, which is, as you become more and more successful and more people use your stuff, about 90% of all computers in the world use Microsoft Windows, you have to be careful not to break the old stuff. The old computers, the old peripherals, you know, the printers and the scanners, the old software. And that, in a way, keeps you from doing too much innovation. You move too far forward, you have a problem. So I think part of the reason Vista took 5 years, I think most of the reason wasn't so much that what it was trying to do was so difficult, but that it was trying to do that and maintain compatibility. And in fact, here we are a year after Vista went gold. Went gold right about this time in 2006. Didn't come out till January, but they gave the software companies and the hardware companies 3 months with the final Vista code to get their stuff working. Turns out that was ambitious. Here we are a year later. And now it's just starting to become pretty reliable. My counsel at the time Vista came out was, wait a little bit. A lot of people said, I'm waiting until Service Pack 1. And that's due out in a few months. But I think now Vista is working with everything it's going to work with. Let's put it that way. Anything recent is going to work pretty well. There are still a few glitches, but Vista is pretty reliable. And the software you use, chances are, it's been updated to work with it. Now let's go over to the Apple side of the equation. It's been, 2 years since Tiger came out. Well, more than that. And Leopard, which is the big cat successor to Tiger from Apple, was delayed. It was supposed to come out, what did they say, June? It was supposed to come out 6 months ago, I think. Maybe earlier, March. Steve Jobs announced, no, it's not going to come out till October because we got to work on the iPhone. That was an interesting statement, wasn't it? At the time, I mentioned there's a couple of ways to interpret this. One, there's a lot of integration between the iPhone and Leopard, and so you can't really get the Leopard going until you got the iPhone going and vice versa. The other less charitable interpretation is Apple's short on talented programmers and, frankly, doesn't have enough to go around. Well, now that we've seen Leopard, I think it's probably the latter. I don't think that there's anything particular to Leopard that the iPhone integrates specially with, or vice versa. We've seen enough of the iPhone to know that. I think the problem was that there aren't enough good programmers to go around, and a lot of people in the Silicon Valley say that. The really good ones, the magic guys, the Bill Atkinsons, the Andy Hertzfelds, the guys who can make magic happen, the Alan Kays, these guys are few and far between, and I'm sure there's many, many good programmers at Microsoft and Apple. A lot of them are going to Google these days. But when it comes to really crafting a brilliant operating system, it takes some leaders that are particularly talented. So Apple's not saying, and Apple never will say, but I have to think that that might have been what held Leopard up. Now, here's the good news. Whether it's because Leopard isn't such a huge upgrade as Vista was, or because they took the extra time, but having now installed Leopard on four machines, on a variety of machines, it's cooked. It works with everything. It does what it's supposed to do. It's faster. It speeds the machines up considerably. Same hardware, a little faster if it's Intel hardware. The earlier hardware we might have some issues with. You need a gig of RAM at least. But if you're running a Mac you bought in the last year and a half, must have upgrade. Just beautiful. Not merely aesthetically beautiful, and I do, you know, there's some argument about aesthetics, and of course that's completely subjective, and I understand that. But there are features in here that are fantastic. For backing up Time Machine is great. You got to dedicate a second hard drive equivalent size to your main drive. But hard drives are cheap, and that's the backup recommendation I've made for the last 2 years anyway. But Time Machine makes it easy. I've been loving the desktop sharing built in. Looks like it's VNC. There's different kinds of desktop sharing. You can easily access other Macs and Windows machines on your network, but if you have a .Mac account, you can even go across the internet and access machines remotely. It's very lickety-split fast. It's kind of fun. I mentioned this the other last show. Family was in the living room. I was in the bedroom. And I thought, you know, I haven't tried this access thing. Let me see if I can get to the living room Mac. I did. I used the new speech synthesis built into Mac. Oh, it sounds good. And I started talking. And it freaked him out because all of a sudden the computer is saying things. And it sounds like a real person. And they don't know, where is it coming from? The computer's talking and I'm not sitting there. Whoa. You want to kind of hear what it... Let me see if I can play it back for you a little bit. So this is what it sounds like. Sounds good. It freaked them out, let me tell you. I tried that thing from The Office. I said, who am I? I just became aware. They figured it out, but because my kids know these, that basically they started typing back, Dad, you're a nerd. Stop it. Anyway, we'll talk a little more about Leopard and some of the features, but I have to say, very impressive. Apple said 300 new features. Some of them are, you know, minor little tweaks, but enough of them are significant that will make a difference in the way you work. And it, depending on how you work, I think it's well worth it. A really good upgrade. $100, I'm told CompUSA is selling it for. $129 is the list. And they have a family pack, I think $200, that you can install it on multiple computers in the house. Nice job. Good job, Apple. Pat him on the head. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. We can talk about Leopard. There's lots more. I want to tell you about this high resolution Last Supper online. Amazing. All coming up. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. And we got lots of calls all lined up. Talk about tech. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's start with Jonathan in Pittsburgh, PA. Hello, Jonathan. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hey, Jonathan.
Leo, okay, now I hear you.
There we go.
Oh, my God. My wife has threatened me.
Oh, no. Why?
If I begin one more sentence with the phrase, well, Leo says, that's it.
Somebody sent me a button, WWLD. What would Leo do?
I understand. You know, I'm so excited, Leo. This Tuesday, I'm going to get my first MacBook Pro. I've never used a Mac before, and I'm scared, and I'm excited. And I feel like I want to do a Mac newbie lightning round with you.
All right. I could do that. You
okay.
Will. I mean, the first thing to understand is a computer is a computer. The DNA, especially now that Apple's gone Intel, the DNA between a Windows machine, that the PC you're used to, and a new Mac is 99.9% the same. Same hardware. The only thing that's different is the operating system. And because of cross-pollination between the two, there are an awful lot of similarities. Apple was the first to do a Windows-based graphical operating system. Of course, they started this in 1984. But Microsoft caught on quick and did Windows 1.0 and 2.0. And by 1995, with Windows 95, it completely caught up. And Apple started stealing from them. So it's gone back and forth. So you'll immediately say, oh, yeah, I recognize it. There's windows on the screen. There's menu bars. There are a few things that are going to drive you crazy. And I'll just bring those up right away. On a Windows window, the upper right-hand corner is the close box, the expand button, and the minimize button. On the Mac, it's on the left. They still have the same three buttons in the same order. You know, minimize, expand. But the close box is all the way to the left. It's kind of a reversed order, I guess. So that's, you know, initially your mouse is going to go to the right and there's nothing there. The grow button is the same. It's in the lower right-hand corner. It does the same thing. The scroll bars are the same. You know, when you're using, say, a program like Firefox or Microsoft Word that has the same menu structure, you're going to go, oh, yeah, yeah, I totally get it. Except for another thing that really bugs Mac, PC guys who go to the Mac. And I talked about this a little bit last show. This is When screens were littler, this wasn't a big deal. But on the Windows machine, they do it sensibly. The menu bar is part of the window. So you're running a program. You're running Firefox. The Firefox menu is in the Firefox window. And each window has its own menu bar. On the Mac, there's only one menu bar. It's at the tippity top of the screen. And it changes depending on what program is in front. So I think the original thought was, well, you can only really use the frontmost program. The menu bar will signal what's in front by changing its name and changing the menu, and you'll know what program's in front. And when the screens were small and the mouse didn't have to move far, that made sense. On big screens nowadays, even on your MacBook Pro, you're going to say, well, now I have to move the mouse all the way up to the top of the screen. It doesn't belong there. It belongs as part of the window, but that's the way it is on Macs. You'll notice on the far left, there's an Apple menu. Look at that, because that often has things you want. For instance, that's kind of, in some ways, like the Windows Start menu, but in some ways not. That's where the control panel lives, only Apple calls it the System Preference pane. It's where you find shutdown, log out, sleep, restart, all that stuff. But there is no Start button on the Mac, and that's something that Windows users sometimes miss. There's the dock, but the dock is considerably more limited. The dock, and you're going to be using the Leopard dock, so you'll I think you'll like it. And the dock can be moved to left, right, or bottom. But it only has a few icons on there, so you really put the programs you use the most on there. I recommend a program called Quicksilver. Write this down, Jonathan, because it's a free program you're going to want to get at quicksilver.blacktree.net. And it is, you press Control Space, and you type the first few letters of any document, program, email address, song in your iTunes, and hit return, and it'll either play the song, send an email, or open an email to that person, run the program, open the document. It'll do what you expect it to do. And that really kind of replaces the Start menu, in my opinion. In fact, it's much faster, because you get very used to hitting Control Space, first couple of letters, hit return. Now, the right menu button still works, but you're going to have to get used to using it on a MacBook. I recommend people who are using desktops to go out and buy a window or use your Windows mouse, because the three-button mouse works exactly the same on the Mac, even though they don't really come with them. They come with that weird Mighty Mouse. On your MacBook Pro, you're going to want to enable, this will be in the System Preference panes under a menu, you're going to want to enable the trackpad's ability to do things like put two fingers on it, for a middle click. It has right click, left click, and all that stuff, but there's only one button, so you'll have to learn how to do that with your fingers. It becomes second nature, but it doesn't happen right away. What you'll find, I think, Jonathan, is in within a week or two, it'll all make perfect sense. It'll be second nature to you, because they're more similar than they're dissimilar.
Okay. So can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure. We got a minute before I have to go to the break, okay. But if we need to, we'll go to break.
All right. Any sites that you recommend for getting best Mac newbie advice?
Yeah, there are a few. Mac OS X Hints is great. MacOSXHints.com. Those aren't really for newbies. But it's a great place to search if you're saying, well, how do I do this? Apple has its own switcher site, which I would probably look at. I think it's apple.com/switch.
Okay.
Are you going to use Microsoft Office?
I don't know. That's one thing I wanted to ask you. First of all, if I should use Firefox or Safari.
I like the new Safari 3,
Safari 3,
which comes with Leopard, is excellent. I would stick with that unless you find a compelling reason. The Q is going to be a little more difficult because it's a Windows mobile device. Hang on the line. We'll talk about that and more when we continue. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. Carbonite automatic secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Apple had a remarkable quarter, as did Microsoft. PC sales up incredibly. And Apple sold, I think, 400,000 more Macs than they've ever sold before in this past quarter. 400,000 more than they'd ever sold before. In other words, This last quarter, there were more Macs sold than ever before. Was it 1.6 million or 2.1 million? I can't remember the exact number. I'll find it for you. But just a remarkable quarter. And it turns out about half of those people, are new. They either never owned a computer or more likely are PC users who have decided for one reason or another to go Mac. Jonathan's one of them. Longtime PC user, Jonathan?
Yes, sir.
And what made you, just out of curiosity, what made you look at Apple?
Wow, great question. Well, because you are my liege. And
No.
I was in trouble.
You're in trouble.
No, because I was just, first of all, I'm a writer. I work with a lot of magazines, things like that. And everybody's dealing with Mac. Also, I wanted to be cool. And I'm trying desperately to always be cool.
It is the operating system for cool kids. No doubt about that.
I want to be a cool kid.
Yep. Well, and you know, that's one thing that has changed considerably is it is, even though it is still a Windows world, very much so, it is not as hostile to Mac as it used to be. Used to be, really, people, you didn't want to use a Mac. Because, I mean, just people would mock you. And in business, the IT department would not support you. And that's still true in some backwards offices. But I think more and more people are saying, okay, all right. And the other thing that's changed is these new Intel Macs run Windows perfectly well as any Windows PC, either in a virtual machine mode using Parallels or VMware's Fusion, or using the new feature in Leopard, the, what do they call it? I've forgotten the name now, but that allows you to run Windows standalone on the Mac. So it is a Windows machine. So you're really never left out in the cold. If you need to run Windows apps, you always can on Macintosh now. So you had a couple more questions. You actually asked them in chat, which is great. The Motorola Q and Rhapsody. Here you're going to have some difficulty. These are built around Windows. The Q runs Windows Mobile. You can sync with it. You need to go to a company called Missing Sync is the name of the program. The company is Markspace, so the website is markspace.com. And actually, it does a pretty good job. I've used it to sync Windows Mobile for a couple of years, and it works pretty well. So you'll want the Missing Sync for Windows Mobile. Additional cost, I think $40 or $50, but it syncs well. So you're going to need that for your Motorola Q. You're going to have a little more trouble with Rhapsody, because Rhapsody doesn't work on the Mac. Anything that supports the Windows DRM doesn't work on the Mac. So if you've purchased a bunch of stuff on Windows, on Rhapsody or, you know, Urge, Zune, Napster, any of the Windows stores, Yahoo Music, MSN Music, you're not going to be able to, you're going to need that Windows machine, frankly, to continue to put them on your Zen.
Well, I need a Windows machine, which I have, or could I just use Bootcamp or something?
Bootcamp will work fine. Emulation will work. You don't even have to do Bootcamp. I use VMware. And Parallels, I've used them both to do a lot of this stuff. Things like sync up with Outlook. Anything that you need to do on Windows, you can do in this emulation mode, including validate and put new music on there. Now, what I would suggest is, and everybody should be doing this, whether you're Mac or PC, whether you use iTunes or Rhapsody, I think we have to start moving away from copy-protected music. That's the only reason, by the way, this doesn't work. Unprotected music, you just copy it to iTunes. iTunes will turn it into a form that the iPod can understand. Or, you know, and the Zen should work with a Mac. If you plug it in and see it as a disk, you could drag files over to it. So if it's the copy protection that bites you. And Windows copy protection only works on Windows. So that's a negative.
And what about AppleCare, Leo? Is it worth it?
You know, I this is the more general question is, should I buy extended warranties?
Usually I don't.
I prefer to self-insure. Now, you understand that you would be self-insuring. If something happens, you're paying for it. Apple has on that laptop, what is it, a one-year warranty? I believe it's 1 year. The problem is that laptops tend to get banged up. They really don't usually live more than 2 or 3 years anyway. So an AppleCare, even though it's expensive, it's a few hundred bucks, we'll give you an extra year out of that. Might be worth it. It depends how gentle you are.
I
have Apple. You sound like a gentle person, Jonathan. I have Apple experts who say, oh, I always buy AppleCare because you get better treatment on the phone, you get better support. I think it also comes down to, do you need support? And maybe for your first Mac, it'd be worth getting AppleCare. It would certainly give you a better experience all around. When you have AppleCare, if something goes wrong, they quickly replace it. They swap it out. They're very quick to respond.
And would I be able to sync my... I use Google Calendar currently. What about iCal?
I love iCal, and I use it with Google Calendar using a third-party program called Spanning Sync. Highly recommend. That way you can use Google Calendar all the time as you are and have it automatically move to iCal. There are some reasons to continue to use iCal and Address Book on the Mac because it's integrated so tightly into the system. For instance, if you're using Apple Mail on the new Leopard and you have an address or a phone number in there, you can click on it. It says, oh, this is a phone number. You want me to add it to your address book. If you add a task by clicking the new task button in Mail, it will automatically add it to iCal. So there are reasons to use the operating system calendar and address book on Leopard. I do recommend that. But if you want to continue to use Google, no problem. Spanning Sync solves it. I use it all the time. And it's great because now I have my Google Calendar is always up to date. And my iCal is always up to date. I also would recommend getting .Mac. Now, that's a little trickier one. You might want to buy it through Amazon. I think it's generally cheaper, like $20 cheaper on Amazon. .Mac gives you some nice features. It's 10 gigabytes of backup, which is, this is a really nice feature. If you're going to use Time Machine, the backup built into Leopard, you might not care about this. But I use .Mac because you can say, I want to have a folder on my computer, a desktop on my folder on my computer called iDisk, that's 10 gigabytes in size, that automatically syncs up with .Mac. Now, if you only have one Mac, not as useful. But if you get another Mac, then you can have them both sync up. So now you have a 10 gigabyte automatically online backup folder that replicates to all your other Macs. Calendars can replicate. Address book can replicate. Probably for your first Mac, .Mac is less valuable. But for anybody who has more than one Mac, .Mac is pretty much a must-have.
Beautiful. Leo, thank you so much. And I love the podcast. I listen to my car all week. And one of the highlights for me was when I sent an email to Dickie D and about the iClops, and he read it, and you laughed. And my wife said, wow, you know, Jonathan made Leo laugh.
Nerd heaven.
Nerd heaven, exactly.
John, well, I hope we get to meet sometime. I really appreciate that. Great question. For those who are Windows users saying, come on, well, I apologize, but we'll move on to something else. But I think it's worth answering for those who are making the move. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Leo.
Thanks for the very kind words, too. You're making me blush. Michelle in Los Angeles. Hello, Michelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh,
you're on.
I didn't hear you at first. Hi.
I know. It's a little weird, you know.
This is a little weird.
These phones are a little weird.
Well, last time I talked to you, you were going to get dressed in a kilt, and I was getting an iPod, and that's when we last spoke.
Oh, I remember. It's Michelle from the Heather in the Highlands.
That's right, laddie.
That's right, laddie. So how is your iPod?
Well, that's what I'm calling about. I absolutely love it, and I use it just practically every day. And I really actually mainly use it for podcasts. I download lots and lots of podcasts.
It's great for that.
And it's wonderful. I've actually filled up a whole 6 gig out of the 80.
Holy, now this is spoken word, so it's not as big as music. That's a lot of spoken word.
Yeah.
Hours.
Well, you're in there and coast to coast and all kinds of other things.
Oh, isn't that great though? I mean, if you know, sometimes you can't stay up all night for coast to coast, but you could put George on your iPod and listen to the UFOs anytime.
Exactly.
I love that.
Absolutely great.
Although I have to say, coast to coast is better in the dark.
Well, so here's my... Actually, I have two questions about
yes.
the iPod.
Okay.
The first one is, let's say I'm in the middle of listening to Coast to Coast, and
yeah.
I get out my car, I go walking on the beach, I really maybe want to listen to some music. So then I have to write down where I am in the podcast.
Oh, that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen. They mustn't be marking it properly, or it must be coming down into your iPod improperly. That doesn't happen to mine, does it?
Wait a minute. You have there's a bookmark.
Yes, it's automatic. It should happen automatically.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, if I go from the podcast to my music
yeah.
in the iPod,
yeah,
and then I want to go back to the exact same place in the iPod,
it should.
Can I do that?
Yeah, it's supposed to. So if it's not doing that, then you can manually tell it to from now on. But podcasts are supposed to do that. My podcast should be doing that. Books do it. But here's how you do it. You'll get the. You can do this, by the way, in a batch mode. So go to your podcasts, select all the files that you want to automatically remember the playback position, and then get info on them. Okay, so that's in the file menu. You select get info, and you go to the options, and you'll see there's a checkbox that says remember playback position. Now, you don't want that checked on music, obviously. You want a song to begin at the beginning every time. But on spoken word, you do want it to go back to where you were. Are you there?
Yes.
I heard a cry of dismay.
No, it was great. Oh, that's wonderful.
It was relief. Yeah, and it should be set by default on anything that is a podcast. If stuff isn't showing up in the podcast folder, it's because they haven't done it properly to make it a podcast.
And wait a minute. No, it's not a podcast. It's just it's a playlist.
Got it. Oh, you want to go back to the same place in the playlist, not in the individual show?
Well, yes. Let's say all my Coast to Coast are in a folder.
Yeah.
They're in a playlist.
Yeah.
And I'm playing one.
Yeah.
And then I stop that or
okay.
I navigate
elsewhere.
I go to another playlist and I start playing music.
Yeah.
I'd like to get back to right where I left off that podcast, you know?
Well, the podcast, if it's properly marked, and you can always do this in the Get Info, should go back to where it last played. But getting to the same point in the playlist is a little trickier. And I know why you want to do that, because usually there's not enough room on the screen to see which one you were listening to. Most of the time, the playlist will go back to the same place. So I'm not sure why it's not. Let me look into that. Michelle, thanks for calling. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo's the number. Interesting question about iPods. One of the things the iPod does really well is remember where you left off in books and podcasts, spoken word, and goes back there. It's kind of an automatic bookmark feature. It doesn't do it in music for obvious reasons. You want to listen to the beginning of the song each time you listen to the song. But if you set it, you can even make music do that. It's a setting. But books and podcasts are automatically set that way to remember and pick up where you left off. In fact, it's a necessity on books because, you know, these book files are usually hours long. And if you had to, you know, skim forward each time to find where you left off, that would be useless. I remember the early MP3 players had manual bookmarking, like the Rio. You had to press a bookmark button, and that just was a pain because you'd always forget. And there are a few players still, most do this, but there are still a few players that don't do this, and they're only really good for listening to music. But Michelle had a different issue, which I didn't understand at first. It's doing the bookmarking fine, but she wants to go back to the same position in the playlist each time. That's a little trickier. What I would suggest, Michelle, it would probably solve this problem, is to create your own smart playlists. And this is what I do, and it's actually very handy. And the smart playlist could be, for instance, I want all episodes of Coast to Coast, and then add one additional clause to this that I haven't listened to yet, that haven't been played yet. So what'll happen is after you listen to a show, it'll actually take it, and then you sync, it'll take it off the iPod. So only the shows in your playlist that you haven't listened to yet will show up. It will at least narrow down the playlist to stuff you want to listen to. And in generally speaking, the topmost thing will be the one you want to hear. And, you know, it does sometimes seem to do this and sometimes not. And I'm not sure what I'll have to play with it. It may be that if you navigate out of the playlist and to another playlist, it does remember it. But it may be that if you abruptly change, it doesn't. I'm not sure. I would play with that and see if you can get it to remember what you were doing. John's in Hemet, California. Hello, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, John.
Hello.
Welcome
to
the show.
Thank you. I have an iMac G5. I've had for about 2.5 years. It's the one that I bought that had a 150-gig hard drive. I was looking at the promo on Leopard last night and was intrigued by the Time Machine feature and their use of a backup drive, so I got to looking at what I've got, and I realized this morning after looking at my hard drive, I have 5 gigs left over. for available to use. And so I was wondering, my wife said, this should be an easy just question. My wife said, why don't you just go ahead and get a new machine that's got more stuff and more space on it.
Hey, if your wife's giving you permission, I do it. Like wife says, but okay, go out.
I was trying to tread the mystical path with practical feet here and wondering if, should I try to incorporate an additional hard drive?
That's
and
how you should do it.
With that.
So let me explain how Time Machine works, because Time Machine is backup for somebody who doesn't want to think about it. And it's really aimed at novice users. Apple says, we realized most people weren't backing up, and that's absolutely true. I know that from doing this show. Most people, I include myself, most of us do not back up. So Time Machine makes it very transparent and easy, but it needs a amount of space equivalent to the amount of space you're already using and then some.
Right, yeah.
So generally speaking, the best way to do this would be if you've got a 500 gigabyte internal drive. Actually, it should be the sum of all your data, because it backs up everything. Unless you explicitly exclude drives, it'll back up all your drives. And then assign an amount equivalent to that plus maybe 30%. So like a 750 gig drive as an external, make it a USB external drive. And then you really make that your Time Machine drive. You don't use it. You could use it for other stuff. But the advantage of not is that as you make changes, all the changes will be saved. So you can go back in time to any point up to the time when you started Time Machine. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. To me, it was kind of an easier version of, Windows going back in the registry to a last sound.
It's very similar to, Windows now does this previous version thing.
Yeah.
On any file. And in a way, it's a better way to do it. It's automatic. You don't even see it happening. And it doesn't require a second drive. Time Machine is really much more of a backup everything all the time and make it very explicit. You can even do spotlight searches into the Time Machine drive. So if you say, I need that book report. My kids do this all the time. Oh, I need that book report. It's not on their hard drive. They freak out. You press, look in Time Machine too, and then it finds it.
Yeah. See, I'm a .Mac member, so I back mine up every week on the Mac server. Online.
In fact, I wouldn't stop doing that, because think about it. This is that issue of offline versus online backups.
Right. Yeah.
You need to do both.
I was wondering,
Time Machine doesn't replace a good off-site backup strategy.
Yeah. Well, I guess I get down to the fact is with my current one, that's the only way is to increase. My hard drive space would be to go with an external thing or just get the bigger machine with more stuff on it.
Well, I would just get an external drive. And the nice thing about an external drive, and it can be part of an off-site backup strategy, is you swap it out. Every week, take one of them to the office and plug in and, have two. They're cheap now. Cheaper than a new machine. So get two drives of the same size and swap them every week. Bring one to the office.
I'm not even doing that. I just have my one unit here at home. This is personal use only.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm just saying if you get it off, it doesn't have to be the office, but get it out of the house is what I'm saying.
Yeah, because of the fire and all
right,
that.
Right, exactly. I tell you, we know that now, don't we?
Yes, definitely from out here, too.
And, we advertise Carbonite, which is another way to do the same thing. And you could have Carbonite's very much like Time Machine, but it's slower because it's doing it over the Internet. But it's kind of trickling it out that way. I actually use both, and I don't use Time Machine. I use kind of more old-fashioned synchronization to network storage. Same idea, though.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate that, and love
thanks,
your
John.
Show,
so. All right. And I don't want to stop you from getting a new computer if you want to. SyncToy is free from Microsoft. I use Second Copy on my Vista machine, but see, I use a network-attached storage, a big, terabyte drive that's sitting right next to the computers. They're always backing up to that. And then I have Carbonite backup online. So I now have several copies of everything. And that's this, whether you use Time Machine is really for people who don't want to think about it. But even then, I still have a problem because you're not getting that offline backup. And that's really, really important. People will still be bit by fire, flood, earthquake. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. When I come back, a high-resolution version of The Last Supper, better than you would see if you went to see it in person, online. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So glad you're here. 8888 Ask Leo. Coming up in just a bit, Ron Rosberg, our gadget guru, with a report on the latest in cell phones from the big yearly cell phone conference, CTIA. He's going to talk about the hot new stuff, stuff you can't even get yet. Cell phones turned into, it's funny because cell phones really turned into one of the hot topics in technology, hasn't it? Ever since, I would say it started with the Trio. People started to realize it's more than a phone. It's a portable computer. And then everybody kind of started abandoning their PDAs and turning to these smartphones. And it's become a huge topic. When I first started talking about technology on the air, it was just Windows PCs, maybe a little Mac. And it's fun to watch how it changes all the time. And it started becoming big cell phone territory about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Now, whenever I go anywhere, people want it. They don't want, it's not so much about computers. They want to talk about cell phones. What do you got? What's the latest? And I have to say, I've kind of fallen prey to that. I carry usually two or three with me at all times. 8888 Ask Leo, if you want to talk about cell phones, MP3 players, anything with a chip in it, we shall do it. Sean is on the line from Roland Heights, California. Hey, Sean.
Yes.
Thanks for calling. Hi. What can I do for you?
I have a 12-year-old son. He's in 7th grade.
I can't help you there. I have a 13-year-old son in 7th grade, and there's no help for either of us. Oh, man.
Well, I was hoping he's asking for the Fly Fusion
pin
that's supposed to help with homework.
Well.
And I just wanted to ask if that's something that's a toy, or is it actually going to be a valuable tool to help him with whatever programs can be downloaded
on that? It's a toy.
It is.
Yeah, LeapFrog would love you to believe that this is... I mean, it is a computer and a pen, and it's amazing what it'll do. I mean, you can draw a calculator... with the pen, and then use it. Tap it, just like a real calculator. It does have language in it. It plays back MP3s. Yes. It's cool beyond words.
And translation of Spanish to English.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to help you.
No help. No. Not in homework, algebra, like it advertises.
It's hard for me to say this because I love the idea. I think the technology is brilliant. I think that, I want LeapFrog to succeed with it. I've had all of the Fly pens from the first one. The new one, the Fly Fusion, is unbelievable, but no, it's not going to help him. It's a toy.
Okay.
It really is. Right. Does he have a computer?
Yes.
That can do all the same things, right? And better.
Yeah. We'll have to upgrade to maybe DSL then.
You do need high-speed internet, yeah. In fact, I would far prefer you spend... the same amount of money that you'd buy the Fly pen for. I think it's $130, something like that.
And then additional pay for different programming for it, correct?
That's going to get you a year's worth of DSL, and he's going to get so much more value out of high-speed internet than he'll get out of the Fly pen.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure, Sean.
I appreciate your time.
It still would be a great present, and I think some kids might get a lot out of it. I gave one to my my nephew, who's a lot younger. I think he's 8 or 9. And he loves music, so he would play with the music capabilities of it. It has a really neat music studio. But it's a toy. It's a toy. It's a pen that is smart. It has a computer built into it, and it sees what you're writing. So as I said, you could draw a calculator and then tap it, and it knows where the number 3 is, the number 4 is, and all that stuff. It has test prep. It has an essay coach. It has an MP3 player. I mean, it has all sorts of cool stuff. The cool factor, 10+. The utility factor, 3 or 4. Flyworld.com if you want to know more about it. And everybody's different. It might be that your kid needs some motivation to spend some time on homework. And this would give him some motivation. It would give him a way to make it a little bit more fun. And maybe it would make a difference for him. But I could tell you, my kid, it would just... And of course, it doesn't take much. I mean, give him a pencil and he's going to start playing with it. Anything to distract him from homework will distract him. And a Fly pen. If I gave him a Fly pen, no homework would get done at all. He'd be playing with it constantly. Because it is, it has some great, cool toy features. So no disrespect to the good people at LeapFrog. I think what they're doing is great. It's very innovative, but no, it's not particularly useful. Paul's in Cuba, Missouri, Cuba, not Cuba, Cuba. Hey, Paul.
Yeah, what's up? Hey, you're a pretty hard guy to get a hold of. I think next time I might have to use the demon dialer.
It is hard. Well, you know, we only have five lines, and the reason is because if you get on with those five lines, that's a guaranteed hour hold anyway. So we don't want to add more lines. You'd be holding for,
I see.
You'd be holding for the whole show. I only get to five or six calls at best an hour. So what can I do for you?
Well, I have a WordPress blog. You know, I have my own shared hosting account, installed WordPress, and I want to make sure that I can back it up.
Yes.
Really good, you know, in case something ever happens, ever I have to move servers or something like
good
that.
Good for you. You know, we talk about backup all the time as far as home computers go, but if you run a website, you better back it up. Now, it's probable, and you should ask your hosting company that they're doing daily or more backups for you.
Okay, yeah, I think that they are.
Yeah, if you have a shared server, you probably don't have to worry about it too much.
Okay.
But there is, if you're using WordPress, there's a wonderful backup plugin that'll do it all kind of for you automatically. It's what I use, and it's, you know, yes, it's the fact that you know, in my case, my hosting is unmanaged. I own this server, and nobody's backing up for me, so I have to do it. But even with shared server as you have, and in which they're almost certainly backing it up, you know, you probably should be backing it up anyway. So there's a really good backup plugin. It's called WPDB Backup. Because there's two things you need to back up. You need to back up your templates, you know, the customization that you've done, your widgets.
Right.
But that you only back up when you make a change. You probably don't make changes very often. What you really need to back up is your MySQL database, all the posts and the comments. And if you're not backing that's where you get in trouble.
Yeah, I have actually what they call, I think it's WordPress backup right now, and it gives me a blob, you know, a little zip backup, and I want to make sure that that's going to work for me.
Yeah, that's probably fine.
File.
What all these will do is they'll generate an SQL file. That's what's inside that zip, and I would check to make sure. And then it is a simple enough thing, and you would have to learn it because you probably don't know it, but it's a very simple thing with MySQL to suck it up. That's basically in that SQL file, the whole database, in a form that can be re-imported by a MySQL database, and it'll recreate it exactly. You do want to make sure it's getting all the fields, and if you do some custom widgets, you'll have additional fields. So I use this WPDB backup. It's in the WordPress database as one of the plugins, WP-DB-Backup. And you could just click all the fields, say back this guy up, and it'll give you, you can either download it or leave it on your server. It'll even do it automatically in the background, and you can then you'll always have a backup. And boy, Paul, I'm glad to hear you ask, because people forget that that's got to be, that's your data too.
Yeah, that's definitely important. So while I was on a hold, I actually thought of another question.
Okay.
If you have time.
Sure.
I have on the front, you know, they have the tagline or slogan, as you call it.
Yep.
And I was wanting to see, is there a way I could possibly make that rotate like once a day or something like that?
Sure.
I actually have thought up like 25 or 30 slogans.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
And I don't know if there's any kind of plug-in or if maybe I can use some sort of category display or...
Well, the easiest way to do it would be go into the template and modify the PHP and use a random...
Okay.
If you do a search for PHP random or quote of the day, QOTD, you'll find some sample code that you could probably put in your template. It's really one line in PHP, and what you'll do is you'll give it a text file that'll contain all of, or you can even have individual text files and have it rotate through them. A lot of people do that with images, for instance. They'll have a rotating image on the front page. If you go to my website, techguylabs.com, every time you come back, there's a different image.
Okay. Is that going to be heavy on the database?
Because not at all. It's not going through the database. It's just PHP. So it'll just...
I didn't want it to be heavy on the database.
Not at all.
It's a shared hosting, obviously.
Yes. No, this is actually very lightweight, because what essentially happens is every time a page is loaded in WordPress or any dynamic website, PHP runs. That's the programming language. It'll run and generate the page, and it generates a page based on a template, which includes some PHP code in that template. You know what I'm talking about. I'm sure if you go to your template files, you'll see these. The one you probably want to modify is header.php. Inside header.php, just a few lines of PHP that generate that top header, including what would normally be your slogan. That's the line you want to modify. You're just going to make that PHP code say, instead of display this text, it'll say, randomly pick a line from this file and display that. I can't give you the code over the air. I think that would be intensely boring for most listeners. And frankly, I'd probably get it wrong anyway. I'll see if I can find a snippet of code that would work for you. I'm sure Sasha probably knows off the top of his head. He does a lot of PHP coding. But we'll put something in the show notes for you. If you Google it, you know, quote of the day, WordPress, things like that, it's easy to find. You could use a widget, but that might, in fact, do a database hit. It's really best just to, it's such a simple thing to do, just to have the code automatically pull it up. WordPress is a great blogging platform, by the way. I love it. I use it for my blog, leoville.com/blog. I highly recommend it if you want to put together a website where you're going to be changing the content frequently. It just makes it so much easier. You separate the design out from the content. It's beautiful. There are a lot of templates. There's a lot of support. It's very popular. And as a result, a lot of people writing stuff for it. WordPress.org to learn about it. You can get, if you don't have hosting, in fact, they even do free hosting at WordPress.com. All right. I keep promising the Last Supper, and I will give it to you when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. How's your Italian? Your Italian pretty good? Alta definizione. That's pretty good. Alta definizione. My Italian is not so good. It's the Last Supper in high def. It's actually, what a great idea. I hope they do this with more great paintings and artworks. Leonardo da Vinci painted the Last Supper, of course, and it's been 500 years, and it's been through restoration, but it is very fragile. And frankly, they very much limit the number of people who can go see it in person anymore. I think it's 25 people per 15 minutes. It's not very 100 an hour, and you have to be dusted off before you see it. So starting yesterday, The Last Supper, one of the great paintings of the world, has been available online in high definition, such high definition that it's actually better than you would get if you saw it in person. It's as if you are inches away. But it's big. 9.8 gigapixels. It is very high resolution. If you want to take a look at it online, again, you need to, it's Alta Definizione, H-A-L-T-A. Alta, definizione.com. Alta definizione, high definition. And you can just zoom in on this thing and see detail that you would never, ever, ever be able to see. They use an Nikon D2X. And they just took many, many, many images and stitched them together. And you can it's just remarkable. They do fortunately have a player, so you're not downloading all of the information at once. You download a small portion of it at once, and you can zoom in even farther. You can move around, and you can see details that nobody has ever seen before. Just remarkable. I'd love to see more of this online. And, you know, the truth is, with the technology as it is and the internet as it is, this is not a difficult thing to do. I think it's very doable. More and more people could do this. I don't know who HAL 9000 is. That's who claims this. Is it a company? I don't know. Well, let me see. I'll read the about. Hey, how about I read the about this? We'll put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com, because I know it's hard to remember that URL. Especially if you don't speak Italian. Alta definizione. Just remarkable. I'd like to see more stuff like this. Here's an interesting story. I want to thank one of our listeners for sending this one in. Carolyn sent this one in. Of course, we've been talking a lot about the fires in Southern California. In fact, many of our listeners, I know, were displaced and evacuated by the fires. It's one of the reasons we've been talking a lot about backup. It brings that stuff home. And when you're evacuated, you don't have time to pack everything up. You might want to pack up your satellite dish, though. This is appalling. Family that lost everything. Their home was burned. Everything destroyed. AT&T sends them a bill for $300 for the satellite dish. It's probably, does AT&T use Dish Network? I think they do. They sent him a bill.
Oh, hey, we want our satellite dish. You lost it in the fire.
Now, I suppose the insurance will pay for it at some point. But come on. That's ridiculous. That's just absurd. And AT&T, use your noggin. It's going to cost you far more than $300 in bad publicity, and I'm happy to give you some. Really bad publicity. These poor people lost everything. And to add insult to injury, now AT&T wants $300 for the dish. I'll put a link to this article, too. Maybe you want to write a note to AT&T and say, hey, guys, that's not cool. Matt and Danielle Azola in the San Diego area. They actually were on their, they were on their honeymoon in Mexico when the house burned down. Apparently AT&T wants them to save the dish. You know, if your house is going to burn down, if there's an earthquake or flood, you might want to save the dish. Please. Please. They do have insurance. Although now we're hearing, aren't we, that some insurance companies don't want to pay up. What a world. Mike, Glendale, California. Oh, actually, Mike, hang on, because I got to take a break. I talked too long. When we come back, we will get to you, Mike, I promise. His Digicam has got battery life of approximately the lifespan of a gnat. We're going to talk about USB turntables, logging your keystrokes, and why Jan's dictionary in Windows in Office 2007 is in French, not English. Also coming up, our gadget guru, Ron Rosberg. He's going to be here with a look at some of the newest cell phones. He's just back from CTIA, the big cell phone industry conference. And he saw some cool new cell phones from HTC, from LG, from Samsung. He's also got a great recorder, field recorder, for people who want to record audio. Actually, he's got like 18 gadgets. We'll see if we can jam them all in. Coming up, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Ron, it's Leo. You ready to go? Oh, okay. Hold on. GoToMeeting web conferencing. Everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Click the orange Try It Free button. Use my name, Leo, as the promo code. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I'm talking to the folks in the chat room, and they tell me that AT&T, after that story, which was published Friday on Yahoo Tech, AT&T backpedaled very quickly on that dish issue. And said, oh, no, it was a customer service rep who got it wrong. No. In fact, a lot of companies, I'm talking to one of our chatters who says Verizon actually rebated him the DSL charge for that month. So a lot of companies are responding very well to those fires. And I'll give AT&T credit. Maybe it was just a renegade customer service rep. Sure, that's it. That's what it was. Hey, let's say hi to Ron Rosberg. He's the gadget guru back from CTIA. Is that the Cellular Telephone Industry Association? That's my guess. Is that what it is, Ron? Oh, Ron can't hear me. Is it the CTIA? Is it the Cell Telephone Industry Association, Ron?
Cellular Technology. Industry Association.
Yeah, because I think we're one of the few countries that calls them cell telephones or cell phones.
Yeah. Most places call them mobile. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. But I've been attending this, by the way, this show here we had in San Francisco, Leo, is not the big show. The big show is usually in either Florida or Las Vegas. And this is the fall show, but it was an interesting show. And a couple things, too, I want to tell the audience that I've been reading about that I think people, carriers are listening to you, Leo, because first of all, the other day, Sprint announced they're going to unlock their phones. Now, granted, they don't have a SIM in it like T-Mobile and stuff, but they're going to make it possible for anyone who's on Verizon, that's the other network, which is CDMA, so that if, you know, for example, if you bought a phone, a $300, $400, $500 phone, and now you want to go to Verizon, you can, and Verizon will probably do end up doing the same thing. This was a class action suit. So the settlement from anyone who bought a phone on August 28th, 1999, up to July 16th, 2007, will be able to have their phone unlocked and take it over to any other CDMA network, because that's what the phone is. And I think that that's going to lead, Leo, to AT&T and T-Mobile to do the same thing. I really do. There's a class action now that's getting ready to be filed on the iPhone people who want unlocked phones. And I think you're going to see that.
That's right.
This precedent will do it. So,
well, you know, in order to sell the iPhone in France, Apple actually had to do that. So it can be done.
And yeah, I think so. Yeah. And the other thing, too, Verizon's been doing this for some time. When you buy a phone, you're locked into a $200 contract. They take it and amortize it over a 24-month period.
Yes.
So if you have 2 or 3 months. Now, also, AT&T, I noticed, saw an article the other day, they're going to be doing the same thing.
Good.
So it will be amortized over
instead
that
of paying
of
that flat $175 cancellation fee, it'll be spread
exactly.
out. Yeah.
So if you've got 1 or 2 months left to go, it makes sense. You'll pay $20-$30 to get out of
That's
a contract.
Great. That's
anyway,
great.
So let's talk about some of the phones I saw at CTI. Now, by the way, I'm not going into depth on any of these. I just want to tell the audience, and I will be getting review and eval units in the next month or two, and I'll then go into depth on the phone. But I want people who are thinking seriously of getting a new cell phone, a PDA, whatever, to know that there are some interesting things coming out. First one I'll tell you about that I thought was very interesting, iMate has about 4 new phones introduced, but I put down 2 of them, the 8502 and the 8510. Now, you had mentioned, Leo, and by the way, congratulations, because you've always called me names by, hey, Ron, you can't walk around with 3, 4, 5, 6 phones. And you told the whole world today, hey, I'm
just
carrying 2 or 3 phones.
Just 2 or 3. That's a lot less, dude. But I am aspiring to Ron Rosberg phone carrying levels. Yes.
Well, Scott Jordan would be happy that, you know, we're filling up his pockets.
That's right.
on his clothes.
We need our Scotty vests. Yes.
Scotty vests. Anyway, but even Steve Ballmer was the keynoter there for Microsoft. He's the CEO of Microsoft, for those people who haven't heard of him before. He had talked about the technology on smartphones, and that's exactly what your comment was. They're getting more and more powerful all the time. So here, the iMate has taken the 8502, 8510, and there's another model that has a QWERTY keyboard. These do not. But what you do with these pocket phones is they have XGA out. It comes with a cord, plug it right into a monitor, plug it into a projector, and you are carrying all your data and everything else that, you know, so you don't have to bring a projector and all that stuff with you. This thing will come right off your phone, which is really kind of a neat deal. Your Bluetooth keyboard. These are Bluetooth, so you'll use a Bluetooth keyboard. This actually will be your pocket computer that you could actually use at home or at the office. They're that powerful.
Now, people who are critical of all the coverage we gave of the iPhone, here's the point. That iPhone has stimulated look at all the changes in the phone industry as a result.
Absolutely. Here, yep. The next one's HTC, which makes a lot of phones for different
stuff.
Companies. Yeah. They make the new Touch for Sprint. I'm anxious to see this. I think I'll see it in the next few days. Might report on it within a week or two. It's going to be for Sprint.
What do you think of the Tilt?
The Tilt is, to me, is like the Mogul. I've been carrying the Mogul, which is my favorite thing for sling.
Yep.
Now, what the Tilt does, Leo, it just pull the screen up, so when you're sitting on a table, you now actually can see the thing without finding something to hold it, like if I'm on a restaurant or whatever.
Right.
It's kind of, you know, it was probably a very simple thing to say, hey, why don't we just tilt this screen? So it's like the Mogul, it's like the Singular 8525, similar to that.
But the touch looks like the iPhone.
Well, does have the photos, Leo, with your finger.
It does.
Almost the same. Yeah, the same way that I love my iTouch. This thing is going to be, you know, for people and be less expensive and stuff like that. So they will be available probably in the next month or so. LG has the Voyager, which is a great big screen on it. Also QWERTY keyboard. It is really kind of a neat phone. I'm looking forward to that. That's Verizon. And Venus, also for Verizon. You could search any of these on Google, and you'll be able to see pictures. I did post some pictures for Sasha. I don't know if they got them up yet or not on some of these phones the Samsung i760, great music phone and stuff like that.
A lot of people are raving over the i760.
Yeah, there's just a lot of new phones that they're taking a lot of what people like really on the iPhone. Again, the iPhone is in a class by itself. It's got probably the best screen. But if you want a different network, folks, Verizon and Sprint are out there, which I do like, especially with EVDO and everything else. As I mentioned before, the broadband network is much, much faster. Anyway, so that's kind of my just quick review. You'll be hearing me talk in weeks coming up. As I get these phones for review, I'll go into depth on them and give you a much better picture on that. I want to talk about, you have usually like every week, Leo, you get someone who said they're doing podcasting. They're looking for kind of recorders or whatever. I came across a really neat recorder. It's Zoom's H2 Handy Recorder. The retail, I think, on it is like $300. I found it online. It's made by Samsung, S-A-M-S-O-N, not Samsung, but Samsung. I think it's the company that either owns Zoom. But it says, who needs the H2 Handy Recorder from Zoom? And it says, everyone who craves brilliant stereo recording. Now, this device, it looks like a classic device. I hope, Leo, is it posted up on the site yet?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, it's a really kind of a neat retro microphone, and it's almost like the size of a studio mic years ago that we have or whatever, and it's battery operated or AC. It has a LCD screen on it. It has four mics in it. And people say, well, why do I need four mics? Well, the H2 is the only portable recorder with four mic capsules on board, 360-degree recording. And so when you have four mics capsules in a WXY configuration, the audio is decoded instantly, bringing these four signals together. Now, this records onto an SD card.
Yeah.
So like on a 4 gig card, you can get up to 2 hours, and it has many different bit rates, Leo. If you go onto the specifications on it, I won't bore everybody with it, but you could go into MP3, you could do Wave, and I tested this the other day, Leo. I think it's good enough. I mean, I'm going to probably do some of my broadcasts when I'm not available on the day to either do them this and
absolutely
send it off to you.
It's
just a piece of cake.
In fact, Chris Marquardt, who's going to be on next hour, is on via an H2. He's actually hooked it up to his laptop and is just using the microphone. And it sounds great.
It is. Leo, I did it. Now, what was really neat is when I was talking, I was doing an interview the other day. I was in the front of the mic, and the other party was behind it. So you have two mics. The audio came through just really nice. So for the money, for $199, take a look at this H2. And the last item I'll talk about, Leo, is I know we're not on Sirius, and hope someday maybe we are. But anyway, Sirius, I just got a new boat, and I was looking for something out in the lake that I could use, because up in Clear Lake I don't get a ton of stations. And so I had the Sportster 5. I had an older Sportster, but Sirius sent me this Sportster 5 to take a look at. Just came out. It's available at Circuit City. It's also available at Amazon, but I found the best price on it, including a vehicle kit. But it's got a color. It's the first one with a color screen. So
this is a head unit for a car.
Boat, or if you get the new boombox, they got a beautiful new. The boomboxes that came out originally were just kind of ugly. Now this one is really kind of design nice. So I've got the boombox inside my house. You remember how you came out in my backyard and I was running a boombox back there?
Right.
Yeah. This, and it's so easy to pick this up. It's very thin. The retail is like $149.99 if you're looking for a gift. Now, again, you have to have a Sirius subscription, which runs $12.99. But I think this merger, Leo, between you and I think it's going to end up taking place, and I believe you're going to see the subscription rate drop to like $5.99 or $6.99 tops, which will make it very reasonable.
Great, but
the Sportster 5, which is nice on the Sportster 5, of course, you can get all the NFL football games, but you could back up to 60 minutes, Leo. So if you miss part of what somebody was saying, just hit the rewind button. It backs it up, and you could, if you miss part of a program, if you were listening to it or had it on that station, you could just press the rewind and go back 60 minutes on it, which is really kind of cool. So anyway, did I get through in time?
Yeah, I think you did. I don't hear any commercial sounder or anything. You talk fast. That auctioneer training has really been great for you. Ron Rosberg, ladies and gentlemen, he's the gadget guru.
I hope my dog park people understood what I said. If not, send me an email and I'll send you the text file. No, I'm only kidding. I don't have a text file.
I appreciate it. And by the way, while we are on XM, I think they're moving our channel. We are on XM Extreme 152, and I think they're moving us. Are they? I'm told in November, so I'll give you a new channel.
Hey, Leo, by the way, too, under your tech guy, under Tech Labs, we have radio stations listed, and several people have reported to me.
Thank you for
under
sharing.
Internet Explorer, it bombs out.
We don't support Internet Explorer. We feel that that is a substandard browser. It is. No, techguylabs.com is the website, and there is a problem with the station list. This is Wiki software, and I'm using a plugin for the Wiki software that uses the Google Maps. But for some reason, the Google doesn't seem to work with the Internet Explorer. So I'll have to figure out what's wrong there and try to fix that. Meanwhile, I will fix it. I'll put a kind of a more standard.
Well, talk to Dvorak. He's such good friends with Google. I'm sure that he can get it fixed up.
it's something wrong with the plugin. I probably should see if there's an update on it. But it works great in Firefox.
I like
Safari.
To send people over there so they can find out where we're on.
In fact, we just added a bunch of news stations. Thank you, Ron Rosberg. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. Leo Laporte here. More of your calls coming up. I am the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. 888-88 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. That's my phone number. All right, I fixed the station list on our website, techguylabs.com. I just took out that Google Map code that was for some reason confusing Internet Explorer. I have some stations to add, though. We're on more stations all the time. And if we're not on in your neighborhood, if you're listening to the podcast or you listen to some other station's stream, I do encourage you to call your local talk station. We are on the premier radio networks, and every town needs a geek on the radio, don't you think? Sure they do. Now, let's say hi to Gene in Emory, Virginia. Hello, Gene, and we'll get to Mike. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Gene.
How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a large number of old 33 and a third LP albums that my husband and I have collected since the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And the new Sharper Edge catalog has come out with a USB turntable that spins your old vinyl records into new digitals.
Yep.
And it hooks to the laptop. And I'm wondering if you think this is a good buy. They don't give me the brand name. It's only $199. Should I try it?
There's actually cheaper ones. There are four companies now that are making these. They're basically turntables with a USB connector on it. So you can just hook it up to any computer. They all come with pretty much the same bundle software. The cheapest one, the least expensive one, you get it on Amazon and other places for around $100. I suspect this is the one that Sharper Images is selling, actually, is the Ion, I-O-N.
I-O-N.
The Ion's list price is $200. That's probably what the Sharper Image is selling. But you can get it for $100 less if you shop around online. Amazon sells it, for instance.
And
Wonderful. Now, for a little more expensive, and this is the one my daughter bought because she's fancy. Newmark is a well-known DJ turntable company. They also make one. That's a little more expensive. I don't think it's particularly better. I do know one that is better, and that's from Stanton, but this is going to be much more expensive. Stanton's been around for years making turntables and DJ turntables. They haven't gone out of business. You may remember them from the turntable days as being manufacturers of the great Stanton cartridges, and they make a USB turntable. And finally, there's one for... people who have good memories from Crosley. Remember Crosley? They used to make the old, big old wood radios.
Yeah.
They're still around at CrosleyRadio.com, and they make a all-in-one. This is for people who don't have a computer. It's called the Songwriter CD Burner, and it has a cassette adapter, a turntable, and a CD burner in it. And so you can record anything on a cassette or a CD to a DVD, an album or a CD. An album or a cassette to a CD. But you already have the computer, right?
Right.
Yeah, I just, you know, the Ion turntable is going to be fine.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I've always looked for an easy way to do this and put this project off, but this seemed to answer everything that all of my needs.
Are you on a Mac or a PC?
A PC.
The software comes with is pretty rudimentary. It'll work, but it's pretty rudimentary. I would spend another $40 or $50. Take the money that you saved. Spend a little bit of it on Magix Audio Cleaner, magix.com. The audio cleaning lab. And what it is it's software that'll record, but then it'll take out pops and clicks and hisses.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So it also
because
helps you divide it up into...
old LPs have been played many, many times.
Exactly. So it'll restore the sound.
Scratches and so forth.
Exactly, yeah. Audio All cleaning right. lab from Magix. Hey, thanks, Gene. I appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Take care. This is something a lot of people want to do. I know. You know, it's funny. My daughter, 15-year-old daughter, never... Since she was born, we've been using CDs. We never had a turntable in the house since she was born. But for some reason, I don't know, the kids these days have a somewhat of a nostalgia for the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s. She was born in the 90s. And she's kind of started buying vinyl LPs, and she bought this Newmark turntable. And not so much because it's a USB turntable, but because she wants to listen to albums, to vinyl LPs. I had to find all the cabling and stuff. Now, the nice thing about all of these, the Stanton, the Newmark, and the Ion, is they have built-in amplifiers, because a normal turntable has to be hooked up to an amp or a receiver before you can hook it up to speakers. These have speaker outputs. They're amplified. So it's much, and that's what you need. Nobody anymore has it. Does anybody still have this receiver with a phono in and all of that? I guess somebody might. Now we get to Mike. Sorry for keeping you on hold so long, Mike. Thanks for your patience. In Glendale, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I wanted to talk to you about a new Canon camera that I got. I had a specific need, so I went to our favorite store, the one that begins with F.
Your favorite store with the ones that begins with F?
You know the store I'm talking about. They have them all over.
I was thinking of Bel Air. All right, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, this sells a lot of stuff besides cameras.
Got it.
So, what I need to do is take pictures in a dim environment of equipment that's not well lit.
Right.
So the salesperson suggested this specific Canon because it has optical stabilization.
That'll help.
And, you know, I wanted to get it to work. And
Mike, let me ask you, is it a still camera or is it a video camera?
This is a still camera.
Okay. So the real key.
What we'll ever do is take photographs.
The real key on this is there are two things that make it a camera, still or video, frankly, better in low light. One is the size of the pickup. That's the chip that converts the light, the photons, into electrons so that the media can record it as bits. And the bigger the pickup, the more light it receives, the better it is in low light. The little compact digital one-shots are not very good at this. They have tiny chips.
Well, that's not my issue. The issue is that I brought the camera home, I put the batteries in it, and I turned it on, and it said, replace batteries.
Oh, boy.
So I went to my stockpile of nice, fresh double A's, and I put in, you know, double A's that are like a week old, and you turn it on, and you get to take two or three pictures, and then the battery icon starts flashing.
Yeah, you can't, you have to use, I would suggest using, I think you'll get better results with the special high-energy camera batteries that are, they're silver, they're alkalines, but they're higher energy batteries. In fact, most of those cameras, I don't, which Canon model is it, Mike? Oh, did we lose him? I guess we did. We're going to take a break for news. Most of them want the lithium batteries, the special camera batteries, and I think that that's probably the issue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or visit them online at dslextreme.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888, Ask Leo. We are talking about technology, and I'd love to talk with you. 8888, Ask Leo. Talking about Leopard, Vista, internet, cell phones, camcorders. Our last caller kind of ran out of time real quickly with Mike, and I just wanted to kind of go back to it. A couple of things. He raised an issue of how do you take good pictures in low light. And I do want to address that. But he also said, my battery keeps dying. And the newer cameras, well, there's two ways you can go with a camera. Many of them have lithium ion rechargeables, just like your laptop does. And you know, that's probably more convenient, except that when the battery dies or gets low, you have to either take the battery out and put it in a charger or connect the camera itself up to the wall and wait till it charges. So when people travel, I generally say for travel, a good idea is to get a camera that takes standard batteries, AA batteries. And there are lots of them that'll do that. Unfortunately, I didn't get the camera model from him, so I'm not able to look this one up. You do need alkaline batteries, and some of these cameras that look like they take AA's may even take AA's, but really want the higher-end lithium alkaline. I guess they're alkalines. I'm not sure. I'm confused by the terminology. I'm not sure exactly if they're regular batteries, but they're, I guess, lithium alkaline. I don't know what that means, but they're designed for cameras. They look like AA batteries, but they're designed for cameras. And those have extra power, and some cameras do require them and won't do very well if you put regular AA alkalines in there. So do make sure you get the right battery, the camera battery that's specified. Now, if you're doing that and the battery's still dying, then there's something wrong with the camera and it's time to bring it back. Maybe the AA Ultras would work, but I think you need a photo lithium battery in there, the high energy lithium. I guess they're not alkalines. They look like alkalines, but they're the silver ones, and those should work fine. They are more expensive, but they last longer, so you know, it's a trade-off. The ones I'm recommending for travel really will take any kind of battery, not require these special photo batteries. In fact, they work very well, in my experience, with the nickel metal hydride rechargeables. And I like that because I hate the disposable batteries. I really like to use a rechargeable if I can. But then if you don't have access to a rechargeable, you can pop in regular AA batteries and get some more use out of it. Important if you travel. Now, let's talk about the low light issue, because that's another issue entirely. I started off saying there's two things that determine how well a camera does in low light. One is the size of the pickup. A bigger pickup gathers more light, so it does better. Now, when you're in a low light situation, digital camera may still work, but it'll be grainier. The ISO will be set up way high, and you'll just get a grainier image. Sometimes too unusable, frankly. So grainy, you just can't use it. So a bigger pickup lets more light. And then, of course, the aperture, how wide the iris is. The maximum aperture of the iris makes a difference. On compact point-and-shoots, they don't do well in low light because they always have little pickups. They're compact. And they usually have very high apertures because most amateur photographers want high depth of field. They want everything that they can see to be in focus. That means a narrow aperture and a small pickup. So compact cameras are not generally very good for low light situations. In those cases, you need lights or a flash to take the picture. On the other hand, if you're going out to buy a digital SLR, you do have the option. The Canon digital SLRs use what they call a full frame pickup. It's a 35 millimeter, essentially a 35 millimeter pickup. That's a big CMOS in there. That means it gathers a lot of light. In fact, this has been so successful for Canon that Nikon has now announced they're going to do a full frame pickup in the next generation Nikon DSLRs. So that's a start. And then you're going to want to get a lens that's a fast lens that has a big aperture. That means a low aperture number. I actually splurged the other day and bought a f1.2 lens. That is a very wide aperture. But as an advantage, you can get low light pictures without flash that look fantastic. I'm using it on a Canon 5D, which has a full frame pickup. So it's a wide aperture, full frame pickup. In room light, you can get very nice pictures, you know, at 1/30th or even 1/60th at a frame rate that you can hold steady. That's what happens is if you don't get enough light in there, you can let more light in by lowering the shutter speed. But then if there's any movement, either through your hands or of the subject, you're going to get a blur. There is a disadvantage, though, to this very, very, and I'm sure Chris Marquardt could talk about this. Maybe we'll ask him about it. This very, very low aperture, this wide open lens, means that there is very little depth of field. The focal plane of the lens is very skinny. So only the thing you're focused on is in focus. Everything in the foreground and the background is out of focus. Now, that's a neat artsy technology. If you go to my Flickr photos, I've been playing with this very fast lens a lot, and people are complaining, and sometimes they say, wow, the focus on this is weird. You'll see it in art photos a lot, where people will really use a wide open aperture to narrow your point of interest. So if you go to my Flickr photos, which is flickr.com/Leoville, L-E-O-V-I-L-L-E. And look at, say, for instance, the it's actually flickr.com/photos/Leoville. There's a picture, how much is that doggy, that is taken indoors in very low light without a flash. And the focal plane is very narrow. Everything behind the dog, everything in front of the dog's out of focus. Just the dog's face and eyes are in focus. And that's because it's such low light and such a wide aperture. So if you're looking to take pictures without flash, without lights, in a dark situation, that's what you need. A big pickup, probably a digital SLR, and a lens that's capable of opening very wide. I hope that makes sense. And I think that in his case, he also needs those alkaline photo batteries. They're the same size and shape as AA's. You could put a AA in there, a regular alkaline AA, but it's not going to give you the results you want. You want the alkaline photo AA. Rob, Newport Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I'm calling about Keylogger.
Yes.
Do you know anything about it? What is the best one? And is there privacy on it? Or
why do you want to log your keystrokes?
Well, it's not for me. It's for my, I want to put it on my daughter's computer.
You want to keep track of what she's doing?
Yeah, and see, but I don't want her to know what's on there and find out if she's. I want to just see if she's doing what she's saying she's doing.
I understand. There are a lot of different kinds of programs you can buy to do these. This is a big business, big industry. There's Spy Buddy, and there's All-in-One Keylogger. There's Perfect Keylogger. I think they're all about the same. Is she pretty sophisticated, or is she not a computer geek?
Not really sophisticated, but knows enough about the computer.
Most of these are stealth, so that unless she knows what to look for, unless she knows where in the registry to look, she won't notice it. Unless she expects that you're doing it. There's a good site, keylogger.org, that lists a number of these and talks about the features and gives you a chance to buy them. They're all about the same. In general, you know, does she use Instant Messenger?
Does she what?
Use Instant Messenger?
I am.
Yeah, that's, yes, you know, if it depends what you're trying to keep track of. If you're kind of trying to keep track of, is she doing her homework, then maybe a keystroke logger. If you want to know what she's up to in the real world a little bit, I have a teenage daughter, I understand. Maybe kind of try to... I have mixed feelings about this. Obviously, it is spying. If she's given you cause for concern as a parent, of course, not only do we have the right to spy, but I think we have the obligation to kind of monitor what our kids are up to. And if they've given you cause for concern, I find that monitoring the instant messages is often the best way. They often say things in IM about what their activities are, what they're up to. They plan. It's probably the one simplest way to keep track of them. And most instant message clients can be logged in one way or the other. If it's AIM, there are a number. It depends what she's using. You should figure out what instant messaging program she's using. Might be easier and simpler than a keystroke logger, which is going to capture everything she types. And that means you're going to be going through a barrel full of stuff, most of it inconsequential. I find the easiest thing to do, and I have had to do this once in the past, the easiest thing to do is to look at the logs of the instant messenger. What I did for a long time is I logged everything. Then I realized, no, just log the instant messenger traffic. I don't even look at it unless there's cause for concern, and then I have kind of a record and I can go back. You could even, if you wanted to preserve her privacy, search for certain keywords so that you don't see everything. It's actually much better than going back and reading the kid's diary. You actually can preserve a lot of privacy while watching for keywords like, you know, drinking or sex. And so I think that logging the instant messenger is often the best way to go about this. Find out what she's using. Is it AOL's Instant Messenger, AIM? There are a lot of loggers for AIM that you can add on. Nobody will see. If it's MSN Messenger, same thing. You'll get a program that's specific to the Instant Messenger she's using. You'll install it on her computer. If she's on a network that you have access to, you can even, and this is probably the most discreet way of doing it, you can even install something on your computer that watches the network traffic, if it's on a wireless network, and captures the instant message conversations. But a good place to start, keylogger.org. They have a table of a whole bunch of different keystroke loggers. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. More to come right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. The chat room is irc.dslextreme.com. The show notes are online at techguylabs.com. Talking in the chat room about Leopard issues. I've been very happy with Leopard installed on four machines now, using on three of them the basic upgrade, the default install, which I don't normally recommend. Usually I like to see, when you're installing a new operating system, I like to see a format and install, erase the drive and start from scratch. But I thought I'd take a chance. Apple said, no, the upgrade's working good. And in fact, I've had no problems. On my big machine, the main machine, the production machine, I decided to do what Apple calls an archive and install, which is kind of probably all you need to do, which is it takes the old system folder, renames it to previous system folder, and then installs a brand new system folder. And no problems at all whatsoever with that. There have been reports, though, on the Apple forums and on the Mac Fixit page of, according to Mac Fixit, hundreds of people who've had reboot issues when installing the new operating system. That's not unheard of. There may be an extension that's installed that's incompatible, or something just goes wrong in the install. In almost every case, at least every case I've heard of, if that does happen, if you do the upgrade, and it almost always seems to be with the upgrade, and you get a blue screen or it stalls on reboot, do an archive and install. Just boot to this CD, the install disk, do the archive and install it, press the options button and choose archive and install. And almost always that seems to fix it. Whether that's because of an incompatibility issue, or it can happen anytime, an install that goes wrong. One bit written wrong can destroy an install. And if you've got millions of people installing something, you're going to have hundreds of them who have an install failure. But I have to say, my results pretty good so far. 4 out of 4 absolutely flawless installs. There are some compatibility issues. FileMaker, is it 8? The latest version of FileMaker is not compatible, even though the previous version was. Odd. If you have an older version of FileMaker, apparently it does work with Leopard. There have been a few bugs here and there, but really, surprisingly, Leopard is, the new OS X is very, very reliable, very stable, and very compatible. You always have problems with a new operating system. They seem to be as simple and as few as anyone could expect. Jan's on the line from Hemet. Hello, Jan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
I don't know how I did this, and I'm hoping you can help me. I'm running Windows XP, and I installed Office 2007.
Okay.
And when I did, it made it so my email only does spell check in French. Those are my only choices, French Canada or French France.
And you don't have other choices. I shouldn't laugh. You don't have any other choices, which means you probably didn't install the dictionaries. So it's pretty straightforward. If you have your Office 2007 disk, go back to it and run the installer again, and it'll say, "Well, wait a minute, you've already installed it. What would you like to do? Is this a repair or a remove?" And it will show you all the components that you have installed and some that you don't. You know, they have this nice little interface with a little plus next to it, and you can expand it out and see what you installed. You never install everything anyway.
Okay.
I mean, the default doesn't install everything. And you can see components that you haven't installed. In there will be the English dictionary, and it'll give you the choice.
So very good.
You want to make sure you install it.
I was hoping it would be something simple like that.
I think it's simple, unless something more significant went wrong. But I've seen that happen many times. It's very easy to fix.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jan. I appreciate it. Gary is on the line. Buffalo, New York. Hey, Gary. How are you today?
Good. Except a little frustrated trying to buy a new television and a VCR for my mom.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Well, her you know, she's been watching the same 25-inch console for 25 years, and finally the green color disappeared.
So hallelujah. Time to get a new TV. You just wait for these things to break. Okay.
But all she wants to do is record soap operas.
Right.
So she can watch one, record the other, then watch the other one later.
Sure, of course.
And her VCR went too. So we went to the store, and she decided to buy this 30-inch tube TV HD.
Is she on cable, satellite, or over the
cable.
Air? Cable.
Cable. So she's got the 30-inch big, but she got the tube TV. I think she's better off with that.
Absolutely. As long as you got the room for it. In fact, the tube TVs are the best HD TVs out there. They're better than any other. It's just that they take up so much room, most people don't want them.
Well, it's a slim model, so it's not too large in the back. It fits perfectly in the space sheet.
Sounds great. Yeah.
It worked out fine. But the problem was getting a VCR. None of them have tuners in them any longer.
No, don't get a VCR. Go to your cable company and get her a DVR.
I don't think she's going to go for that.
It will be easier.
She knows how to put a tape in. You know, she's 80 years old. She puts a tape in. She knows how to record. That's about as far as she's going to go.
It'll be so much easier because she'll have a program guide. She'll, in fact, you, what I would do is I would set it up for her so that it automatically records her show. And then she just, and show her, say, you press this button, there's the menu, and see, there's all the shows recorded. You think she's not going to be able to figure that out?
Well, I don't think she's going to want to.
Okay. Yeah, I understand.
Well, let me ask you this.
I got a mom, too. I understand.
So I have, well, I've got several old VCRs around here, you know, with the tuners in them.
Good.
The old analog tuner. I'm assuming that's going to work. Will that work with the cable?
Does she have a digital cable box, or does she have
No, she just has a regular
analog cable. It will continue to work. In fact, the switchover doesn't impact cable. It is only for over-the-air viewing. That's not going to happen until February 2009, so we've got a year and some months before that happens, and that's just for over-the-air. Cable has been mandated to stay analog for a few years after that. Now, eventually, cable wants you to get a digital box.
Yeah, I know. They're pushing me, too.
Yeah, it's just for financial reasons, but they're not allowed to force you for at least 3 more years.
See, now it's not. When my kids were home, before they all went away to college, we had like 5 TVs in the house, and we'd have to have 5 digital boxes.
I know. It's frustrating. I agree with you. I don't like it. You know, it's just their business model. They want to put more channels on the same cable, and they want to charge you for a digital box. The good news is it'll be a while, and I think there'll be consumer pressure not to do it precisely because of people like your mom. The cable company's going to be responsive to that. I think there'll always be an escape clause for them. Hey, coming up in just a little bit, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Unlimited local and long-distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So glad you're here today as we talk about high-tech. Phone number 888-ASK-LEO. And more of your calls coming up in just a bit, but it's time right now to talk about digital photography. I look forward to this segment every week. Chris Marquardt is a photographer, a camera expert, and the host of The Tips from the Top Floor, a great podcast, The Tips from the Top Floor. .com. If you want to, you know, really learn about digital photography, it's a great thing to listen to. And he joins us every week to talk a little bit. We have an assignment we're working on right now. We'll give you a few more weeks to work on that. The assignment is fake. Now, the assignment's not fake, but that's your assignment to take a picture illustrating the concept fake, put it up on Flickr, and put it in the tech guy groups with the tag fake. And Orbit Gal will make sure you get in there. Chris Marquardt, welcome. It's good to talk to you again.
Hey, Leo. Good to be back.
Back in Germany, you were in the States for the last month or so.
Oh, yes. I spent almost 7 weeks in the States.
Wow. Have you done that before?
Not as long. No, the longest time before was like five and a half weeks. Yeah. But that was back in 88 when I was still younger.
A young man. Still a young man. You went to a podcast expo, I know. Did you have a good time there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a blast. I mean, the whole networking thing that goes on there is just... absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed it. I hate to miss it. But anyway, I'm glad you're back in town because we want to talk about taking pictures of food today.
Yes, and I get this question asked a lot. People love to cook, they love to barbecue, and that nice meal, they want to share it with someone.
Yeah.
They want to take a picture of it.
Yeah.
And what you end up doing is you take a, very often I see a picture of a plate on a table, and that's about it. probably using cameras built in flash, and it never really turns out as it was there.
You know where I see a lot of food pictures is on blogs and camera phone blogs.
Yes.
People, for some reason, people seem to take a lot of pictures of meals with their camera phones.
Well, you eat several meals a day, and some of them are probably really nice looking. But one of the issues is that you tend to, well, the photograph itself doesn't really reflect the actual situation you're in, because you have smells, you are in a nice atmosphere, and all that can't be really recreated on a picture. So the picture, only can take part of the situation into account.
Right. Yeah, and in fact, it's almost always disappointing. Plus, between white balance and junky camera phones, often that delicious roast beef looks green. So that's another
that's
problem in time.
A possibility. Yeah. Might be the beef, though.
It could be the beef. So give us some hints to get better food pictures. This is something that people do this for a living, the food stylists.
Yes.
And
they'll
use all sorts of weird techniques to do it.
Yeah. First of all, whatever you heard about food stylists and that you need spray paint and whatever to get nice pictures of food, it's just not true.
Okay.
There are some that work this way, but a lot of it is edible after you've taken a picture of it or after they've taken a picture of it. So something that is very essential about photography in general is light.
Yeah.
And with a frontal flash from your camera, you'll just not really be able to capture it nicely, because it just imagine you have this flashlight on your head and you light the whole scene. That's never how we see the world.
You wouldn't want to eat in a restaurant that had bright flat light everywhere.
No,
would you?
No. Exactly. So the easiest way to get nice light is to find the right time of day, such as in the late afternoon. The last 2 hours before sunset have usually very beautiful warm light. And then take that plate of food outside and then take a picture of it.
Of course. Oh!
Because you have really nice light there, and this will make this plate of food look so much better. Now, food photographers use some tricks. For example, a sauce might skim over, and that might not look nice on a picture. So you want to take that picture as quick as possible before that happens.
Right.
Or ice cream. In studio situations, ice cream tends to melt. So the pros sometimes use plastic ice cream for that.
Or
glass ice cubes. But that's only important in a real studio situation where you have lots of light and lots of heat.
Yes, I've seen that plastic sushi does always look better and more appealing than the real thing. It's a good point.
So I wouldn't try to eat any of that. The other thing is with chocolate. Chocolate in good pictures always looks like nice and shiny.
Yeah.
In reality, chocolate looks more matte.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? So you spray it with oil?
No, you don't spray it with oil. Use a hairdryer and warm it up slightly.
Brilliant. Now, most people don't carry hair dryers with them, not to restaurants.
That's right. So that might be a difficult one. In general, what I think is important, get some inspiration from actual cookbooks where you like the photography. Because one thing you will see, they don't just show the plate with the food. They add some props in. They have a napkin there, nice clean napkin, some cutlery. They might have a cake. A piece cut off of a cake to show you the inside. Things like that can really add a lot to a picture.
Yeah. So composition's important. Lighting, critical. We don't have to spray paint.
No, not at all. Sometimes a sauce might be too thin and run away. I had that with a spaghetti sauce, a tomato sauce that just ran through the pasta and ended up on the plate being watery down there. It didn't look bad when you ate it. It was yummy. It smelled good, but it didn't look good on a photo. So sometimes it might help to thicken a sauce a bit and do a few things like that.
So that's if you really want to take some time. But what if you're just sitting at the table and you don't want to mess with your dinner because you're about to eat it?
try backlight. backlight, light that comes at you and not from behind you, will help you get some nice reflections on the food, some nice shimmer on the food.
Oh, so a little highlight maybe.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, very good idea. Very good idea. And it's nice to have a macro lens if you're going to take pictures of food, like flowers.
It can also help if you're going to get in closer. Yeah. If you don't have to show the whole plate. You can get in closer, cut off some of that plate. The way our brain functions is that it fills in the blanks.
We don't need
so
the
you
plate.
See part of that plate.
Yeah. We exactly. want the cake, not the plate.
Exactly.
Chris Marquardt is the podcast expert, the photography expert at tipsfromthetopfloor.com. And don't forget our current assignment. I can't believe you just told me there's 1,100 people now in our group.
Yes, it's absolutely mind-boggling. Oh,
that's wonderful. Thank you, everybody. The Tech Guy group is on Flickr, so you have to be a Flickr member, but that's free. FLICKR.com. Sign up and get an account. I have a pro account. It's worth it because I upload a lot of photos. It's a great way to share your stuff. Orbit Gal runs the Tech Guy group. If you just go to groups and search for Tech Guy, you'll find it. Join up, though. We'd love to have you in it. Orbit Gal gives intermediate assignments all the time. She has one. The most popular one, Let's Play I Spy. What fun.
That's a good one.
Yeah, no kidding. Our current assignment, you want to describe it for us, Chris?
The current assignment is fake. So you are supposed to find something that's fake or just depict the concept of fake in some way on a picture.
I've got some great
ideas. Make it a nice composition. Try to think a bit about it.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. I got some. You know, I think the best way to do this, I've realized now after this is our third or fourth assignment, is to think about that concept and go out and do a photo walk or take some time and go to somewhere where you think it might work and really pay some attention to it. That's how you get the picture.
Absolutely.
A lot of fun. Well, go just sign up for Flickr, flickr.com. It's free. Take the picture, tag it with the word fake, and then put it in our Tech Guy group. You may only submit one picture per week, so make sure you pick your best ones. That's the one that bites me every time. I can't pick one. Chris Marquardt, great to talk to you. We'll talk again next week.
All right.
Let's say hi now to Jennifer on the line from Laguna Niguel. Jennifer, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Oh, I didn't know this was you.
This is me, the real Leo Laporte, not that fake one you were talking to earlier.
Anyway, I'm trying to decide on a PDA and what kind of PDA I need. And essentially, I've never used a PDA before, but I've been reading that the Tungsten E2 is nice because it has the Bluetooth compatibility to hook up with my computer, which is Bluetooth compatible.
Mm-hmm. Almost all of them do. Most people aren't buying PDAs anymore. The PDA is kind of dying because everybody's buying smartphones, which are essentially PDAs with phone capability. But I take it you don't want a phone on yours.
Well, that was the other thing is when I was reading about these smartphones. I just got a new phone. I mean, it's nothing fancy, but it's just a regular Samsung phone.
If you don't particularly want to combine your phone and your PDA, I don't think there's anything wrong. I mean, but you have to carry two devices. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I love the Tungsten. I think have you used a Palm before?
No, I've never used one. What I would like to do is I teach classes, and then I also have my own schedule. So I'd like to be able to merge the two so I could see, like, when I'm going to have an exam, plus, you know, all my appointments and everything,
right.
Kind of like have one schedule. Because right now I'm carrying around a piece of paper with my school
schedule. Yeah, yeah.
And my little planner with my other appointments.
What do you keep you don't keep it on a computer at all right now?
No, not my schedule. I mean, it's typed out, yeah.
Do you use a computer? Oh, you do use a computer. Okay.
I use a computer all the time for school.
Yeah, what you'll do is you'll move that typed out schedule into Outlook, or you can use the Palm desktop, and some people find that actually superior. And you'll just keep your schedule in there. You'll have two categories or more. I have several categories. I have work, personal, family, travel, vacation, but you'll make some categories. You'll have at least two, one for your personal calendar, one for your school calendar. And they'll be all in the same calendar, and you'll be able to very easily turn them on or off if you only want to see work or you only want to see personal. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very good way to go.
So do you think, is that the best one for just
yes.
getting a PDA? Or
yeah, it's a simpler one. Now, you can get Windows Mobile devices or Windows CE devices, Pocket PC. But I like Palm. I think it's an older operating system, but it's a simpler operating system. And I think for what you want to do, it's probably the best. And the E2 is inexpensive. Palm's been making these for years. They know how to do it. It's a nice device. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a good way to go. Eventually, you're going to say, I'm tired of carrying two things. Your next phone will probably be a smartphone that has all this capability. But for now, I think that's a great way to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte here, the magic geek. 8888 Ask Leo. We're almost out of time, though, so save that number for next week. I'll be back on this same station talking high tech with you. Of course, all week long, you can hear my stuff on the internet. Yes, the internet. I think there's a future there. TWIT.TV is the site. Twit.TV. And I do about a dozen different netcasts, shows that we put on the internet so that you can listen to at your leisure, at your convenience, covering Mac, Windows, security. We even do open source, junk food, parenting. I have one I really like. It's called Jumping Monkeys. It's all about parenting in the digital age. I do it with a good friend, Megan Maroney, who has a four-year-old girl twin boys. I have teenagers, so we cover the bases. This most recent one is about why sleep is important, not just for teens, for everyone. It opened my eyes. Did you know, for instance, sleep researchers say that lack of sleep can cause weight gain? Turns out there are two hormones stimulated by sleep deprivation. One's leptin. I can't remember what the other one is. But these hormones cause appetite. They're the same hormones that cause you to be hungry. So when you're deprived, and I've noticed this before, I always thought, somehow I'm trying to make up for lack of sleep by eating more food. But it's really true that lack of sleep can cause weight, is very closely correlated to weight gain because of these two hormones. And so you should get your full sleep and sleep. Go to sleep at the same time every day and wake up at the same time every day and get your 8 or 9 hours. And you can actually lose weight, which I thought was very interesting. Anyway, that's the kinds of things we talk about. We have a Windows podcast. Windows Weekly, Daily Gizwiz, Security Now, all of that stuff. It's at TWIT.TV. Keeps me busy gives me something to do during the week. Otherwise, I just watch Hollywood Squares and drink milkshakes. Steve, Whittier, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. I am going to be working on a cruise ship in Hawaii.
Oh, rub it in, why don't you?
Well, yeah. The thing is, laptops or electronics in general don't interact well with sea air.
That's true. But you're not going to be out on the deck with your laptop all day.
Well, who knows? So what I was wondering is ways I could protect my laptop. I was thinking like a plastic baggie, one of those big Ziplocs.
Yeah, I mean, mostly in that area, it's humidity, not sea air. It's not the salt in the air that you have to really worry about. It's the humidity. And frankly, sealing it up could make it worse. It wouldn't give it a chance to evaporate. So, frankly, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, the people I talk to who are on cruise ships all the time, we do these geek cruises, and they don't take any particular precautions. The cruise ship itself, of course, is heavily air-conditioned inside. It's a perfect environment for a computer. So it's only when you bring it out on deck that it's going to be an issue. And I suspect you won't spend a lot of... It's so bright out there, you probably won't spend a lot of time out on deck. Are you a performer? Well, what are you going to be doing on the ship?
I'm going to be a host. So I'm giving tours on the ship, game shows, making sure your trip is a good time.
So you're going to be like Gopher?
Yeah.
That's so cool. I'm so jealous. What fun. We have a listener who actually calls regularly, who brings his laptop on something a little more challenging, actually, on polar exploration cruises and deep sea exploration cruises. And he just uses a regular laptop. He says it's fine.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Right. I have one more thing, Leo, just for that parent who called in earlier about his daughter.
Yes, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, I would say if a parent is going to leave a computer unsupervised for their child, then he should at least tell the child that he may or may not be logging.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. Now, here's the issue. He wants to spy on her without telling her because he wants her to speak unguardedly, right?
He wants to build trust with her.
That's what I feel like. The most important thing is to build trust. Exactly.
And that's just, as soon as he finds out, you know, problems arise from that, and pretty soon she's, I don't know, working at the truck stop.
Yeah, she's sneaking around, exactly.
Exactly. And then their cell phones, she could delete her messages, you'll never know what he's saying.
I agree with you, Steve.
So, thank you very much for your tips, and...
have a great cruise, I'm jealous! Have fun. No, I think that's a really good point. In fact, that's kind of the point, the point of view that my wife's a psychotherapist, take with our kids. We have teenagers. We feel the best thing to do is to make sure you have good lines of communication. And my daughter is very forthright and honest with my wife. She doesn't talk to me. My son talks to me. Boys with boys, girls with girls. And I think the maintaining trust is maybe even more important. The problem with the spying on the kids is it is ultimately a breach of trust. And it develops this kind of syndrome, this cycle of mistrust that ultimately you can't win. If they don't want you to know what they're up to, you won't. So we kind of take it from the other point of view, trying to get them to talk to us and not being judgmental, being understanding, but saying, you know, keep us up to date on what you're doing because you can get into trouble. Life is hard. We have been there. We might have something to offer. Steve, San Jose, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Steve.
Hello. Yes. Thank you for taking my call. This is my my situation. I have a Palm Pilot, brand new one I bought. And I lost all my data, but I backed it up on my laptop, and this has happened before where my laptop was lost, and I had to, you know, maneuver and sync it back from my the Palm Pilot.
Right.
I lost it,
right.
And I had to sync it back to my laptop. And now, for some reason, it's dumped it from both of them.
Aye.
So I have that back, bak.dat, because I have to back it up a couple times when this has happened before.
Yes.
But so is it hidden somewhere in my laptop somewhere?
Yeah, I believe you can go back through previous backups. Yeah, what happened, obviously, is that it deleted all the data. This sometimes happens with syncing. It gets out of control and thinks you wanted to delete everything, and then backs it up. So now
I have one more thing?
Sure.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
I also to protect myself, I backed it up before this happened on my external hard drive and on my thumb drive, and then when I go back over there, those are like wiped out when they shouldn't be wiped out.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, but I dragged and dropped it. So my friend says maybe I didn't back it up properly.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, you probably just got the data without the index.
Yeah.
So there's other files that you need as well.
Right.
I believe if you go to the Palm site and look through their support site, I believe, as I remember, I've done this because we've all lost Palm data. It happens all the time. There are ways to get the previous backups alive. I would check the Palm site for that. Unfortunately, I'm out of time. I got to run, but thanks for joining me. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.